Welcome, everyone. My teacher, Tenzin Roshi, said that his teacher, Suzuki Roshi, said that the main job of a Zen priest is to encourage people to practice Zazen. I'd like to fulfill my responsibility tonight. We can encourage people to do Zazen by sitting Zazen with them. It was nice to sit with you all earlier. And maybe sometimes by talking about it. Sometimes maybe talking about it is not that encouraging, but hopefully it can be, and hopefully it can clarify this Zazen of the Buddhas and ancestors. There's so many kinds of meditation practice in this world, even within the Buddha Dharma. So I also feel responsibility to this lineage of Buddhas and ancestors to convey their understanding of Zazen as I understand it. It's a subtle and yet simple practice. And it's unique. There are other traditions similar to Dogen Zen, but many that aren't. What makes the Zazen of the Buddhas and ancestors unique? So, for many years I've liked to go to the root teachings of the tradition, of the lineage, which is for us Dogen Zenji and Keizan Zenji. They said a lot about Zazen. Of course, there's all the Chinese ancestors before them too. I think it's fair to say that the main practice of our lineage is Zazen. It was true in ancient times, and it's true in modern times. It may be true that in modern Japanese Soto Zen in Japan, there are temples, Zen temples, where Zazen is not practiced. It might seem strange to us, but it's kind of like how things are. In modern times, it's still called the Zen school, the meditation tradition, and yet the temples may be focusing more on rituals like funeral ceremonies. Apparently, modern Japanese, when they hear Zen, they say they associate Zen with funerals and death. Because that's what you go to the temple for. Some temples have Zazen, of course, too. But I think our modern American version of Zen temples is a little bit closer to the original spirit of least in this way, that we emphasize zazen. And Dogen has some great teachings where he expresses his understanding of this central practice of zazen. There's a teaching he has called the acupuncture needle of zazen, or the point of zazen that cures all illness. Reverend Mushin and Nettie and I are studying that together. And Dogen also has an essay called The Universal Recommendation for Zazen, or Recommending Zazen to Everyone, which I think he really means everyone. Everyone can practice this zazen. It might sound difficult, but I think Dogen's heart was that was trusting that anyone who wants to can practice this subtle, wondrous way. He even says in his universal recommendations, Dogen says, this zazen doesn't matter whether you're dull or sharp-witted. Between the dull and the sharp-witted, there's no distinction. If you concentrate your efforts single-mindedly, that in itself is wholeheartedly practicing the way. So it's not about intelligence or having to understand a lot of philosophy or something like that. But it's somewhat subtle, too. That's why we need this, the wholehearted effort to understand and then practice it. And so in those universal recommendations, Dogen says, the zazen that I speak of is not the practice of concentration. It's not the practice of dhyana, even though the name Zen comes from the old Sanskrit term dhyana. It's not like a concentration practice to get concentrated and then as a platform for kind of opening to wisdom. The zazen I speak of, Dogen says, is not just a concentration method. It's the Dharma gate of repose and bliss, the Dharma gate of ease and joy. It's the practice and verification of totally culminated enlightenment. That's a bold statement of Dogen. It's not something that leads up to totally culminated awakening, Bodhi. It is totally culminated awakening. This is, I think, kind of unique to the Zen tradition. And so, in order to talk about zazen, I thought this would be nice on a rainy evening to talk about zazen, but practice some zazen. And we could practice some different kinds. I think one of the drawbacks and advantages of the Zen lineage presentation of zazen is that it's very sparse. Even Dogen's instructions, it's not like a manual of a bunch of techniques. It's more like poetry. I say it's a drawback because then it's quite hard to understand. Maybe we have to just sort of intuit or just warm up to these descriptions of zazen. That's compared to you know, as someone who's enjoys practicing and studying all the different lineages of Buddha Dharma. I think Zen is the most this way, and that it's the least explanatory of what the meditation is. Both Theravada, Vipassana traditions have a lot of details on what exactly you're doing in Zazen, and the Tibetan traditions too. So I think it's kind of a drawback, but it's kind of an advantage to not say too much about it, because I think it was intentional that the Zen ancestors didn't explain too much, because they didn't want us to get too into thinking it's some method to lead to some future goal. They're trying to open us to the reality of the present. But because the teachings are somewhat vague about what exactly this zazen is, I think it's helpful to talk about it. I think the Zen tradition began in an environment where people already learned all these methods and types of meditation practices. So we come to this not without that background usually. So I find it's helpful to look at several types of what we can call zazen, types of all great types of zazen, and that we can practice and tease out the kind of differences between them. And they're kind of, they can build on each other. So I thought I've talked about it, and we can sort of practice it as I speak. Try to check out, this is like the zazen lab. We can try out these different types of zazen briefly tonight. So make yourself comfortable if you're not already. And without going into a lot of details about posture and breathing, because I see everybody here has been actually practicing zazen for some time already. So I think you know those points. So this is more like once we have a settled, relaxed, comfortable posture and comfortable, relaxed, natural breathing, then what do we do with this mind, this unstoppable mind that's running all day long, always thinking something, always attending to something? How do we train this mind in zazen? So the first type of zazen is I think one that's probably familiar to everyone. Let's call it the kind of classic traditional name for this type of zazen is like calm abiding or serenity with a support. Calm abiding with a support. Serene presence with a support. A support or an object. Something that we use to kind of like a, like if we're walking with a walking staff, it's kind of, it helps support us. It's something we can use to help us walk. So there's many supports we can use, but the classic, one of the classic ones that we often recommend is breathing. This breath is always with us. It's always present. So calm abiding with the support is to let the body and mind calm down, using this support or this object called breathing, the experience of breathing. Any support we would use in Zazen, I would propose, is an experience. Some traditions might use a mantra to focus on, but we're not actually focusing on some like letters flowing through space. We're focusing on the experience of sound. So the breath is an experience. It's a sensation. It's a movement. A tactile sensation. And in Zen, when we follow the breath, tradition is usually to follow it in the lower belly. Letting the breath be relaxed and natural, flowing in and out by itself. Mind is attending to this support, this experience called the breath. We're practicing mindfulness of this particular experience called breathing. Mind is attending to the sensation in the belly. And with all these meditations, we can speak of what we're attending to is in the foreground of our experience. So the breath, the sensation of breathing in the belly is in the foreground. We're placing it intentionally in the foreground of our experience. And any other experience that may be happening, we let recede a little bit to the background in this practice. There might be other bodily sensations, tension in the shoulders, or a tingling in the knees, but actually in this practice, we don't attend to those. Stay with a one chosen experience, support of the sensation of breathing. Thoughts or emotions are experiences that may arise, but again, we let them recede to the background and only keep one experience in the foreground. The more intention we bring to this practice, the more we're able to stay with this one experience called the breath. We decide before the meditation that's what we're going to do, at least for some time. And the mind can't be controlled completely, and yet the intention is extremely powerful. If we have a strong intention to stay with it, that's maybe one of the main things that helps us to do it. Of course, it's a training that we can develop and have such an intention over and over, and maybe gets somewhat easier. Develop a habit staying with this experience called breathing. This practice is developing calm abiding, which I think we all have some taste of, that when we stay with this simple experience of breathing, the body starts to feel calmer, and the mind feels calmer. Anytime we're just staying with something simple in the present, a simple experience of the present, it tends to be calming. What's not calming, what's agitating, is a lot of conceptual thought about the past and future, which we like to do, even though it's agitating. But this time, let it all go. So now, that's a description of Zazen number one. Now you can continue to follow the breath, and now we're going to transition. And nice thing about these types of Zazen is they're distinct, but they're related, so we can very seamlessly transition from this Zazen. This calm abiding with the support of particular experience called the breath, to the second type of Zazen, which is called calm abiding without a particular support, unsupported calm abiding. If we're used to walking with a walking staff, we might be a little bit scared to let go of the staff. But once we're already been walking a while with the staff, and we're walking pretty steadily with the staff, called the experience of the breath, because our intention is strong to do so. Without tossing away the staff, we can actually just start to attend to more than this one particular experience called the breath. Remember, in the first case, anything other than this one experience called the breath, we're not exactly rejecting it, but we're just letting it recede to the background. We're not attending to anything but the breath. Now, we can open our attention a little bit more to other experiences. But let's make sure that the other experiences we're opening to are ones that are happening right now. So not abstract experiences. And let's not get into attending to thoughts, even though they might be experiences arising in the present. If thoughts arise, we could maybe attend to the kind of texture of the thought, the kind of feeling that goes along with the thought, but not to the content of the thought. I would not recommend attending to the content of thought, because it's not about the present. We're attending to the physical senses. We already were attending to this physical bodily sensation of the breath, but maybe there is some tension in our shoulders. Now we can attend to that at the same time. The same time is now. We're attending to the breath and the tension in the shoulders and the feeling of the face. Maybe there's some tension in our face. We can just let it relax. Any sensations in the body, we can attend to the whole body. But not the idea of the body, but the actual physical sensations of the whole body, all at once. And another one of the five senses is hearing. There's an occasional sound of an owl in the distance you might have heard. There's a little hum of cars, there's a little rustling, there's a little owl. At the same time, we're having a wide awareness here that's attending to the physical sensations and the sounds, the sound of this voice. The same time, and in our tradition we usually leave our eyes open a little just so we can bring in one more physical sense called seeing. We don't look all around the room, but just attending to the color of the floor. There happens to be a smell, can it attend to that too? But mainly it's physical sensations still kind of dominant, but all, the whole body of sensation and sound and a little color all at once. Present. We're still staying present. The support of the breath may still be here, but now the support is our entire present experience. So sometimes it's called calm abiding without a support, without any particular support. Or we could say the support is, or the object of meditation is, the entire present experience. The multi-sensory experience of the present is in the foreground of our attention. And the background, some thought might arise, but we don't attend to the content of the thought. Let that recede to the background. Sometimes I think of this kind of meditation as like surfing on the crest of a wave called the present. It's like so dynamic. The experience is constantly changing. Nothing, no part of the experience lasts more than a moment. So it's very dynamic. And yet we're staying on this, the tip of this wave called the present. That's our main intention. We're just right here on the edge of the present. Not going forward, past it, not falling back to what was that experience that just happened. Let it go. Just this one. Maybe it's clear that even though we're not attending to a particular object like the breath, this is not what we would call spacing out or daydreaming. Is it not? Very present. That's the key point of both of these types of zazen. Is it's very present. It's not even very present because the present doesn't have degrees of a little bit or a lot. It's just plain now. Maybe a little bit of thought, like, oh, I know that sound, it's a car, I wonder which way it's going. That reminds me of, duh. It's just sound. It's okay to have the thought that it's a car. That's not too disruptive, but don't let it extend beyond the basics. Hopefully this is also relaxing and rejuvenating and refreshing. So that's the end of the description of this second type of zazen. So before we go on to the third and the fourth, I thought it might be nice to discuss that a little bit, like your experience between these two types. Like, there's quite a lot of similarity. I think the main similarity is that they're both about the present experience. But experientially, do you have a sense of the difference between them? For you? Anything you would say, how you would describe the difference?
In some ways, I found the first one a little easier because it's a definite focal point. And the second one, I find kind of like it more. It's just very expansive, but requires a little more discipline in the sense to not wander. It's easier to wander with the second one because the mind starts to catch.
I totally agree, yeah. That's my experience too. Did anybody else have that feeling? The second one's harder. Does anyone feel like the second one's easier?
What was the question?
That the second type of these two zazen is easier than the first?
It's a little tricky. It seems like, well, it's more spacious.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it feels like, yeah, easier.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, keeping that attention.
Yeah, I think that's right. Or like Neti said, it seems a little bit harder, but she kind of likes it more. I think that's kind of how I feel too. It's a little bit harder to not wander off. I think it's a little... that's why we call the first one calm abiding with the support. It's easier to walk when you have a walking staff. Right? If your legs are a little wobbly and you just drop the staff and keep walking, you might walk off the path or trip and fall. So, yeah, I think it's true that, if I'm a little bit sleepy, either on the side of kind of sleepy dull, it's the second one is quite a bit harder. It just really turns into a daydream pretty quickly. Or if I'm like agitated, like I'm kind of obsessing about some thought, it's also a little bit, the second one's also a little harder because I just go right back to the obsessive thought. The first typo, we're just attending to this one particular experience is very grounding. So if the mind's either kind of tired, kind of sleepy, wandery, or kind of agitated and obsessive, maybe the first is maybe kind of more helpful. So maybe for practicing the second type, if we want to try to practice that because we like it, it's nice to be like really, you know, quite relaxed and alert and present. So we take care of our life, hopefully, so that when we come to the Zendo, it's not like, oh man, all I can do is just nap in here. My hectic life. Sometimes we come to the Zendo for a little snooze, myself included. But sometimes we come to the Zendo like, actually, I'm really up for being really present in a kind of expansive, spacious kind of way. And my obsessive thoughts, I don't really need to deal with them right now. I think it's a really good thing to kind of decide in general as we practice Zazen more, is like, let's not spend our precious Zazen time obsessing in a conceptual way. Any other differences between these two?
Joy.
Yeah. Maybe because it's a little more expansive, it's like, it's more inclusive. It's kind of like almost nothing's being excluded, except we're kind of still saying, let's kind of like, a little bit kind of let's exclude this conceptual thinking thing, because it's gonna derail us. It's gonna take over. It's so strong. This conceptual thinking, it dominates our life so much. Let's just let it take a rest. But apart from that, where it's really like, it's more inclusive and therefore maybe more joyful because of that.
Somehow everything is familiar.
Yeah, everything's more familiar and, also I find the experience when I'm really present with it, is there's a little less ground to stand on. It's almost like, if you're really, really present with it, it's almost like all the senses are kind of mixing together in this way where I'm not exactly sure what's going on in quite the same way as with the first type. I'm a little bit more like, I know what's going on, breath. Going on, like if anyone asks me what's going on here, I know the breath is going on. The breath is, I mean, in a way too, when we get really present and non-conceptual with the breath, it also becomes kind of mysterious. Like, maybe have that experience too, like maybe I don't really know what the breath is, but in this multi-sensory openness, I find just personally that it's easier to start forgetting that I'm actually in the Zendo, because that's kind of a conceptual thought. It's just, there's a color of the floor and there's the feeling of zazen in the body, but it's not labeling it like, oh, this is a period of zazen in the Zendo. The very idea of what we're doing here starts to disintegrate, which is, I think, very nice. I like that. It's kind of a burden to keep having this sense of, like, I'm doing my life like this. We can kind of let that go. So there's the two types of zazen. And there's two more we could talk about. We still have time. It's a rainy evening. We're just sitting here. Let's keep going.
We could go until tomorrow.
We could have 108 types of zazen. But I think it's nice to, like, sometimes these different, what I'm calling types of zazen, are we kind of mix them together, or we don't have such a strong intention, we kind of sit down, well, let's just see what happens. And there's some virtue in that too. But I think it's really nice to actually make clear distinctions, really be clear of both the similarities. Is nice to see, oh, these all are about the present. I like this when we do Zazen instruction, our intro to Zen. It's one of the main points I like to mention to people. There's lots of things you can do in Zazen, but the main bottom line is it's going to be about the present happening, present experience. These are two different versions of the present. One version of the present is we're just focusing on one particular aspect of the present, and we're letting everything else recede to the background. And one is we're including more of the present experience. But it's still, the mind is attending to an experience in both of these cases. And I feel like, well, there's just the experience, but actually what's happening, if we start to examine, is what this mysterious thing we call the mind. Mind is attending, is paying attention to an experience, which is basically what it's doing all day long. Mind attends to experience effortlessly. If we wanted to attend to a particular experience, that takes a little effort. But it's kind of amazing, isn't it, that our mind is this kind of thing that was given to us that naturally is always attending to some experience, even of a baby. It's kind of miraculous. And then our zazen practice is using that miraculous ability to kind of playing with that miraculous ability to attend to particular aspects of what's happening. So, regarding this third type of zazen, Suzuki Roshi is in our lineage of Buddhism ancestors, and he's got this book called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. It's so great. Maybe some of you have seen it. I highly recommend it. It's amazing teachings in there, and the more I read it, the more it opens up. And I find, for me, the pith, the heart, the zazen of the Buddhas and ancestors is in that book, is in this section called Mind Waves. You can check it out when you get home. Just a couple pages, Mind Waves. And in that that chapter, Suzuki Roshi says something like, when the mind is relating to things outside itself, that's called small mind. or limited mind. And the way that I understand these first two practices that we talked about, I think they're kind of like that. There's a mind attending to an experience that seems to be outside itself. That's what we call it, an object, a meditation object. The Buddha recommended attending to meditation objects sometimes. But when we're doing that, it's nice to acknowledge that, according to Suzuki Roshi, the mind that's related to an experience outside itself is called small mind or limited mind, which makes sense, right? Because if there was an unlimited mind, there couldn't be anything outside of it. So the mind that's related to an experience outside itself is small mind or limited mind. Big mind, Suzuki Roshi says, is including everything within itself. Big mind, he says, is experiencing everything within itself. This is I think a teaching of the Zazen of the Buddhas and ancestors. And then he says, do you see the difference? Suzuki Roshi says, do you see the difference between mind related to experiences, the mind that's relating to things, and the mind that includes everything within itself? He says, do you see the difference? And then he says, actually, they're the same. But they're two different kinds of understanding. And he says, when, depending on which kind of understanding we have, we live our life differently. We go about our life differently, depending on the understanding that, and you could even say the experience of, there's a mind here that's attending to an experience outside of itself. This is called small mind, limited mind, versus big mind, which includes everything within itself. Big mind, or we could say unlimited mind, means it has no limits, it has no boundaries or edges. So it's not like big, like the planet Earth. Much bigger than that. Big, like sizeless. So big, so vast, it transcends dimension, as one of our Zen poems says. So, how can we practice Zazen with this big mind? Do you see how these first two descriptions of Zazen could fit Suzuki Roshi's description of, even though he talked about these types of Zazen in other chapters of this book, in this chapter he's saying those are kind of limited mind. We might say, well, how can we access this big mind? So this is third type of Zazen I propose, is the Zazen of the Buddhas and ancestors that Dogen and Keizan Zenji and Suzuki Roshi speak of. And so let's go back into the lab where we left off. Again, we can move through, we can again transition seamlessly between these types of Zazen. Like, There's four types here. So we have a 40-minute period. I've been sort of guessing it, dividing it into four 10-minute sections. So you can play with this. You can try and really making a clear distinction, smooth, seamless, but clear distinction between these four types. But you can also go through 1, 2, 3 within like 20 seconds. It's a free world. It's a free zendo. So the first, we're attending to the breath. We can count to 10. Maybe we count to 10 without missing a number. And we're like, okay, check it off. We did that. Now let's widen. Widen our experience to include not just the breath, but again, all the bodily sensations and the sounds and the colors. With an intention to do so, we can stay with this. We're back in the present. And it's nice to be here now. So again, where mind is attending to the whole range of sensory experience. Mind is attending to an experience. And we might say, but these physical sensations are not outside of mind. But if we look carefully in this zazen, we might be able to distinguish that there's a little bit of a feeling or sense that there's something called mind. It's not a physical thing. It's not a located thing. But there's mind attending to experience of sensations and sounds. These sensations and sounds seem like they're a little bit outside of mind. Suzuki Roshi says, mind is related, is relating to sensations and sounds. If there's a relationship, that means there's two things. We might just notice this little, maybe quite slight sense of division between the mind that's attending to experience and the experience. Don't let it become a kind of intellectual idea about this, but try to get the experiential sense of this ungraspable, unlocatable mind that's attending to something external to itself called physical sensations, and especially sounds seem to be outside of mind. They seem to be over there instead of within. So while continuing to attend to this multi-sensory wide experience of the present, we can start inquiring, getting curious about what's happening. The first two types of zazen we tried in a way, I think we're not emphasizing curiosity. We just have a strong intention to stay with the particular experience. Now we're, that's why they're called calm abiding. Now the other aspect of meditation is insight or inquiry. Combine with calm abiding. If we don't inquire from the space of calm abiding, then it becomes just conceptual thinking. We're in the present. We're calmly abiding in the present, attending to the simple sensory experience. And now we can let a question arise, a very experiential question, not to be answered conceptually, but in this present event, what is it that knows these experiences? What is it that's attending to the sensations? We're focusing on the object called the sensations. Now, what is it on the other end? What is it that's attending to the sensations? Not trying to answer in any kind of conceptual way, because there is no good conceptual answer. But letting this question shift the zazen. A little bit away from the experience, back to what is it that's attending to the experience. So the Zen ancestors call this turning the light around, the light of awareness that's directed outwards towards an experience, even if the experience is the sensation of the breath. We say that's directed outward from the mind towards an object, an experience. Turn that light in the other direction, back towards the source. In Dogen's universal recommendations for zazen, he says, learn this backward step that turns the light of awareness around and shines it back. Body and mind of themselves will drop away, and your original face will manifest. If you want such a thing, practice such a thing without delay. Similarly, Dogen, in this same essay, says, think of not thinking. It's a slightly Zen poeticized way of saying, attend to that which is not thinking. tend to awareness itself. Think of not thinking. How do you think of not thinking? This is hard to describe. Dogen says, how do you think of not thinking? Non-thinking. Then he says, this is the essential art of Zazen. Again, it's not that experience will disappear. There are sensations and sounds, but we let these experiences of external events, things that seem external to the mind, we let them recede a little bit to the background, because now we're attending to that which is aware of them. We attend to that which is just knowing. Knowing awareness itself, which may be quite hard to attend to because it's not an experience. Maybe it makes the first two types of Zazen seem relatively easy now, because now we don't have an experience to attend to. And as I mentioned, that all day long the mind is attending to experiences, so this is something unusual. And yet, we can settle back, fall back into the space, ungraspable space, bright knowing space, in which the breath is arising, in which all kinds of experiences are happening. If we try to attend to awareness and pinpoint it in some way as another thing to focus on, it's impossible. It's not another experience or thing to focus on. It is more like the space. Ordinary, ever-present space in which all experiences are taking place. We say we can attend to this space, but maybe even that very language could trap us into thinking we're somehow going to see it or experience it. It's impossible. So maybe rather than saying attending to the vast space, the big mind in which everything's happening, we could say, let's just be this big space. We are this big space in which everything is happening. It's most truly who we are. We may be used to feeling that I am a body, and I am the thoughts, I am the emotions, I am all these experiences. Because what else is there besides experiences? but what if I am the boundless space in which all experience is arising and ceasing? I and you are the space in which the body as an experience is arising. You are the space in which thoughts arise and cease. You and I and the ever-present, ungraspable, unthinkable, knowing awareness without dimension, without location, without change, without being born, without dying, without being harmed by any experience that takes place within ourself, within this vast space. How could space ever be harmed by any experience? How could something which doesn't come and go with no location, how could such a thing ever be harmed? Can we trust in this space? Maybe even gradually develop trust. And if it's something new, maybe it's not so trustworthy. Can we deepen our trust in this space so that we trust this knowing space more than any experience? This may be a big request. We're so used to trusting some experiences and not trusting other experiences. But we're not used to trusting that which is not an experience. But the more we can settle into it, the more we can let all experience come forth within this space, the more and more it seems most trustworthy. Because all experience is impermanent and thereby ultimately untrustworthy, not worthy of refuge. Can we take refuge in that which cannot be destroyed, cannot be benefited, not be harmed? resting in this open, bright space of knowing, or as Zen ancestors say, it's knowing without touching things, knowing without relating to experiences. It is illuminating without facing objects. Resting in this is called just wholeheartedly sitting. Shikantaza. It allows any experience openly, wholeheartedly allows any experience to arise within itself. Because it's not afraid of any experience. If this is the basic zazen of the Buddhas and ancestors, then we might say it would be redundant to add in a fourth type of zazen. And the fourth may be just a variation on this theme. The fourth would be to continue to inquire as the space, while being the space, while trusting our true nature as this ungraspable, boundless, and yet undeniable, aware space. From here, to inquire, what is now the relationship to all these experiences? This kind of inquiry we could get into for the rest of our life. In other words, if all these experiences are arising within this space, then there's nothing external to this space. There's no subjects and objects. Although it may appear that way and feel that way, they're all just expressions of this space. They're manifestations within this space. And to explore it's kind of turning back, turning the light back again towards experiences and deeply investigating and inquiring, what are they? Where are they? Whose are they? Is any thing or anyone separate from this space? Just have a couple minutes. Do you have any comments about these types of zazen? Maybe the third and the fourth, we didn't spend much time distinguishing. They maybe kind of blend together kind of naturally. But can you see a kind of a big difference between, say, the second and the third? You sense that? Remember, the second is attending to the full array of multisensory experience. And the third zazen is being the space in which the multisensory array of experience is happening. To see how those are different. It's, again, like Suzuki Roshi says, it's not that they're really different. 30's talking about, there's two two ways of looking at our life, but the two approaches have a very different way of going about our life. One is like, we're really not separate from anything. And it's total mystery. We are all sharing this one boundless space, aware space, appearing within it. And the other one is, we're still really present, but there's a little bit of a sense that there's somebody over here attending to experiences over there. Could you follow the difference between these? Do you think that this third type is difficult? Yes, Patrick.
So the third type really is kind of settling in those questions of how am I experiencing this, or what is experiencing the sound?
Yeah. They're questions. They're questions invoke the realm. Questions fuel the zazen. Curiosity expands the limitations of small mind. And it's harder to talk about the third one, which is why maybe we don't maybe bring it up so much like in zazen instruction, because but again, going back to Dogen's point at the beginning, between the dull and the sharp-witted, there's no distinction. I don't think this requires a kind of intelligence, but it requires being really present, really awake, and really curious, and really open, actually, too. I think it's a kind of open to something new. And actually, I think, and some courage to be willing to open to a realm that's not an experience. The sense of the separate self, I feel like my sense of separate self doesn't really like to do that. That's why I have to kind of get used to it. The sense of separate self wants to maintain itself. So, and the way it maintains itself is to have experiences that it's relating to. So it's kind of like it has to kind of dissolve the sense of the separate self that's having experiences. That has to dissolve into the space. It's still maybe there's some feeling or appearance of it being there, but it's like it loses all its credibility. That's why it takes courage. It's like, I can still appear here, but like, I'm not running the show anymore. And and I'm actually a kind of flimsy conceptual thought is all I really am. This self. Whereas my true self, my true nature, is not a flimsy conceptual thought. It's totally ungraspable, boundless, inseparable. So, it's hard to put into words. But that was one attempt. And I'd say if you're interested and curious about this, and maybe this is something that everyone's already practicing here and there with, but if you feel like sort of on the edge, but it's not totally clear, that's this kind of thing is the classic territory for Dokusan meetings. You can really inquire together and discern the details. Like I myself have had thousands of questions about how all this can be and how to practice this. And there's thousands of different angles on it. So it's a lifetime project. But I invite conversations about this Zazen, which I feel personally committed to conveying, because this is the gift, I feel like, of Dogen and Keizan and the Buddhas and ancestors. And now, maybe it seems a little bit more maybe possible to open to Dogen's saying that the Zazen I speak of is not just learning a concentration practice. It is the Dharma gate of repose and bliss, of ease and joy. It is the practice and the verification of totally culminated enlightenment. Thank you for your attentive presence. And may any merit and open-heartedness generated through our meeting this evening be expanded to include all beings within it, held in the warm embrace of the Buddhas and ancestors' love. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.